Welcome to the Tech Flash. If you're looking to increase your ed tech knowledge that's quick and easy to listen to, you have come to the right place. Let's join our host, Josh, and see what today's episode is all about.
Hello and welcome to the Tech Flush. Man, I'm excited that you're back. I'm excited you're tuning in and listening. Now, listen, for our newbies out there, you're in for a real treat if you never tuned into the show before. We've got a real big time guest today, probably the biggest that's ever been on the show. And he's been on there three times, just incredible. Most people are one and done, but I'm just excited to have him back. And for our old listeners, again, you're going to be in for another treat. It's just going to be awesome. So stop watching TV. You know, mowing your yard, walking your dog, all the things you can put some headphones in and listen. It's going to be an incredible conversation. So let's go ahead and get started. Well, this is episode number 80. So it's a big time there. So let's go ahead and introduce yourself. Adam, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you said yes again to be on the show. And so for our newbies that are really have not, I assume everybody's heard of you. Everybody's heard of Short Answer. But that's just me. But for those people that have not heard of you, or know who you are and what you kind of do, you kind of give us some highlight. Tell us who you are or background, any kind of information you want to share today.
Yeah. Well, first, thanks for gassing me up so much. I appreciate it. My name's Adam Sparks. I was a teacher for 7 years. I taught middle and high school social studies and English, mostly in Nebraska, which is where I'm talking to you from. That's where I'm from. But also taught in China. I taught in Chicago for a few years. And then 3 years ago, I did my master's degree in learning design and technology at Stanford and at the Graduate School of Education. And in that program, you spend a year trying to solve a problem in education using technology. And as an educator, I had experienced many problems. And the one that I wanted to work on most as someone who had taught the humanities was I spent a lot of time reading kids' writing and giving them feedback and then handing that feedback back to them and having them, they would ignore most of it, look at their grade and move on. And so wanted to work on the problem of how do we get kids to critically engage with feedback? And that was the original kind of problem statement of what became Short Answer, which is the digital writing platform that my wife and I have been building ever since. So what started as a master's project, we got some grant funding and launched it. We've been building it ever since. And that's how I met you at an EdTech conference. And that's how we've got to where we're at today. So that's the brief history of me and who I am. And I appreciate you having me on multiple times. I enjoy these conversations.
Yeah, I think sometimes you have those genuine conversations outside of like a recording. And so like, especially like me and you, I think most time our conversations have been like emails or like a text or whatever. But I think just the conversations we have when we do hit that record button have just been really phenomenal and just really kind of pushes me not just to share Short Answer, but revamps how I do things in the district or how I share things. So I always appreciate those conversations. And I think it's so wild every time you talk about your story, how you did this capstone project and like it just developed into something like this. And you never really know with that starting a project or starting an idea where it's going to end up. And I think it's just phenomenal to where you've been and to where you're still working to be and where you're at now. Just incredible.
Well, I mean, the fact that we were at Stanford helped. I mean, you can't dream up a better place to launch a startup. I mean, it's kind of the water you swim in out there. And even in the Graduate School of Education, they have an organization called Stanford Accelerator for Learning. And a big part of what they do is fund and support educational research, but also educational technology startups. So we won our initial grant through them. And without that, we wouldn't have been here today, to be honest. And then in addition to that, we won an international tools competition. It's called the Tools Competition, but it's a competitive grant application for learning-focused digital technology tools. So the combination of having those two grants during my master's was kind of like the real impetus that launched all of this. So lucky to have built it where we did.
Yeah, I think it's just a phenomenal program. I think when we really think about Short Answer, yes, I know there's tons of like gamification part. And I think part of what students need is that gamification, right? They need something fun instead of just being a tool that they go on and they work on. But really the tool part of it, like if we take away the gamification part, the tool part of what you've created, again, and I tell you, I think I've told you this every time we've ever talked, it's just phenomenal because not that we're just working on the foundations of writing. We're not just working on writing and the skills that come with it, but to be able to do that peer review and even just the instant feedback. Because like you said, like you would grade these papers, you would give it back to students, but that could be like a couple of days later, it could be a week later, depending on our caseload. It's awesome to not just get your feedback as a teacher for that, but to have students reading it. Because I feel like then, like if I know my peers are reading my paper, man, I want to work a little harder because I don't want them, I don't want to sound bad. I don't want to say, I use this term a lot, but I don't want to sound like a goober in my writing, you know, because like people are seeing that. And so I feel like there's a little pressure for that for them. But then to have that instant feedback in the classes that I've done it in, the classes I've demoed, or even worked through a project or a writing in class, those kids are really loving that part of it, seeing, oh, my peers thought it was good. My peers thought I did this really well. Like it just continues to drive the ability to continue to write well and to continue to grow in that area.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, when we started working on what became Short Answer, AI was not a thing. And so a big part of what we were trying to do with using peer feedback was get kids more feedback, get kids feedback faster. And obviously with AI, that issue has gone out the door. Like getting kids feedback quickly is no longer a problem. But it is still a problem to get kids to critically engage with it, because just because you can spit out a page of feedback for a kid and hand it to them like the second they're done with their writing does not necessarily mean that the student is going to critically engage with that feedback in ways that are going to improve their understanding and their writing ability. And so I think we want to continue, we do have AI feedback in the platform now, but we want to continue to center the peer feedback that you mentioned, because by having to go through the process as a student of reading a bunch of different work examples from your classmates and decide like, oh, this one's good because X and this one's maybe not so good because of Y, analyzing all those different work examples gives you an internal sense of like what makes for good writing, depending on whatever success criteria you're practicing as a class. And so I think that critical engagement piece with feedback is just as hard as it's always been. And so I think the way we've tried to go about it at Short Answer is by having the students be the ones giving the feedback, because in that way, they're having to critically engage and wrestle with things in, I think, really meaningful ways. And of course, we're now augmenting that with AI to improve it. And so I think going forward, it's going to be even better platform because of it. But yeah, at our core, we always, I think, want to be peer-to-peer.
Yeah, because even, you know, I think about like writing and almost the way we communicate, because I can communicate with you. And if I sound, for a lack of, again, better word, I'm just boring, right? There's no tone to my voice. It doesn't go up and down. My face doesn't move. Like sometimes, like I was talking to a class earlier this week and I talk with my hands. So it's like, if I didn't do all those things, I would be really boring as a speaker, as a teacher. And I feel like sometimes when we write, we don't want to be boring. We want to use higher level words. We want to do those more critical thinking pieces. And so then when we read them, you know, AI does a really good job of those quick feedbacks, quick things. But I feel like when a teacher reads it or a kid reads it, then we're able to, I guess, show more of emotion to it. I can connect more to your writing, because we've all read papers. We've all read those higher level things as adults. And it's like, it's a really good paper, but it's really boring. It's just a bunch of data. It's just a bunch of facts. It's a bunch of research. And we get that part of it. But when a kid writes and they're writing a story, they're analyzing two stories or passages, and they can really get in some feeling into it, and you can feel that as you read it, I feel like now they're really starting to create. They're really starting to do something. So again, that's where that peer feedback comes into. It's just not a bot that's reading it and says, hey, your grammar was good. This was okay. This idea was okay or good, you know, but to have that peer feedback to say, hey, that was really good. That made me feel this or feel that. That really goes back to that old school mindset before AI with the writing, to like have that emotion to it.
Yeah. I think kind of what you're getting at is voice. And getting kids to develop their voice is one of the harder things when it comes to teaching writing, you know, because it's predicated on so many other abilities and skills and background knowledge. But it's also, I think, the pinnacle of good writing is having a clear and strong voice. It stands out even more now than it ever has, because there's so many people that are using AI to do their writing for them. And I see it because it's overwhelming my LinkedIn feed and my Twitter feed and, you know, whichever social media you choose. And everybody sounds the same. We're using these like sort of pithy, short, stubby sentences that are saying sort of, there's just a voice to AI, or I guess lack thereof, that is glaring. And so when you do read something in 2026 that has a clear strong voice coming through in the writing, it feels even more powerful, I think, because of the juxtaposition with all this AI slop that's now floating around the internet. And so I would, emphasize that a lot with kids of like, writing is your ability, writing is your superpower in communicating who you are and what you believe to the world. And that's not necessarily something you can outsource to a machine. You need to develop that for yourself. It's part of identity formation in a lot of ways. So all that to say, I'm really fired up about the work we do and the skills that we try to help teachers develop with students. And yeah, peer feedback is a huge part of that.
Yeah. And even I know we're going to talk about short answering, but I have one more thought. When you talked about just like communicating and have that AI, just, when you get an AI email, when you get those things. A couple of months ago, me and a principal at a school, we were looking at this platform. And we demoed it. The person had emailed this back. And as soon as I got the email, I got a text from the principal. And I was like, he was like, is this AI? Did this person use AI to write it? And I read it. And I was like, oh my gosh, like they couldn't even, like, you're wanting me to like purchase your program, but all you did was copy and paste, or you just said, AI, do this process. And it just didn't feel genuine. Like, and I feel like, yes, there's a place for me to generate a quick AI response. Like, even for the podcast, I have people that will reach out and they have nothing to do with EdTech, which is amazing to me that they would reach out, but they'll reach out and they'll want to be on the show. And I'm just like, I don't need to waste the time on this. And I may just do an AI response. But then sometimes you've got those people that it kind of fits in. And I want to put my thoughts, my feelings into it to reach out, because I think there's going to be that balance of it with writing. But again, like, I know how to write. I have that foundation for it. And so like short answer with the peer feedback, like you're still building that foundation that continues to have that. So
you're touching on a really important point, which is like, it really does communicate intention when you send something that's AI written. And I do worry about that in the context of AI feedback on student writing, because this is tangential, but I promise it's related. So there's a research body, lead researcher is David Yeager at the University of Texas, Austin. And he's done this whole body of research on wise feedback. And to oversimplify it, wise feedback is essentially, they found that when you leave feedback on student work, if you include a supportive statement about the student, it's like, hey, I'm leaving you this feedback because I care about you and I know, and I want you to improve your understanding and, et cetera, et cetera. And here's my high expectations for you. When you leave those messages, as opposed to when you don't, kids are X percent more likely, I don't remember the specific numbers, but they're more likely to use that feedback when you communicate that to them. And it's, I think part of that is because you're communicating your intention to the students. It's crystal clear, like, oh yeah, this person cares about me. This isn't just criticism or wanting me to do good on, get a good grade or something. It's because they actually care about me. And so the larger point there is there's pretty much research that supports intentions matter. And what does it communicate to a student if you never read their writing and just send them automated AI feedback every time, right? It kind of, to me, you run the risk of communicating to the student, like, I'm really busy and I don't have time for this, but here's some feedback, so go ahead. And I worry about what that means for, again, like the uptake of the feedback, but then also just the culture of the classroom in general when you consider how important relationships are in driving learning outcomes. So it's a tricky balance, because I do think, I don't want to be an AI hater. There's a ton of utility. Like, AI is really good at providing feedback, especially if you structure it correctly. We've tried to go about creating that structure, short answer. So I'm not an AI hater. I think there's a place for it, but we have to be really intentional about it so that we don't, kind of to your point, inadvertently communicate the wrong intentions to students, because that can be a disaster. In the same way that you just described, of like, when I get an AI slop email, I'm just going to ignore it. Like, you couldn't even bother to send it. Why should I pay attention to it? I think our students are maybe having similar reactions to some of the feedback they're getting on their writing.
Yeah. And I love that idea, like you talked about in the writing, to have somebody say, hey, like, this is what you, like, more like that relationship building in the email, right? Because I think too, like in our classrooms as teachers, we have the ability to improve students' well-being, their workflow, their just academics in general, their life. Like, we have them for a long time. And then when we have teachers that are, I don't know, they don't build those relationships, and their classroom is run differently. Now you're impacting a kid that could be the next programmer for a writing tool, the next programmer for this, the next somebody, a next president, right? That has that ability, but we've impacted their learning that year that we have them. because we didn't continue to build them. We didn't continue to do the right things for that student. And now we've impacted them. And so the same thing with like AI or like how we're grading them. If we can pull that realism to it, we're impacting them for the better instead of just giving this generic response that kids are just like, oh, that's just AI. The teacher's not really doing anything. Why keep working for them? So I think it kind of really just not just for AI and writing, but just all the way around, it impacts things.
Yeah. In some ways, when you were describing that, I was thinking back on my high school experience. Remember, I won't name his name, but I had a high school history teacher that was maybe more interested in coaching basketball than teaching history. And it's a pretty common occurrence for him to just roll out the TV at the front of the room and throw on a Ken Burns documentary. And that was class for the week. And I love history. So I actually love just sitting there watching Ken Burns documentaries. But at the same time, that communicated very clearly to the class, like that teacher's intentions on how much that teacher cared about how much we learned in that class. And so, yeah, intentions matter. And we got to be careful about the intentions we're communicating to kids, whether it be using AI or just in just about anything we do in the classroom. Because like you just said, it's critically important for the scope of their lives. Like teachers have a huge impact. So got to be intentional.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the scope of your life and writing again, it's one of those things that it's going to be with us forever. Like whether we're texting, we're emailing, we're doing those things, like it's always going to be there. And we want to make sure that we're intelligible. We want to make sure that we're speaking what we want. I mean, having that feeling that comes across. And even our word choice. I mean, we could talk for days about this, I feel like. But listen, I know you've got some updates to Short Answer. I've been on there looking at them. So like you talk about intentionality. I feel like every time we've talked or I see an update that comes through Short Answer, like when you talked about here just in our recording here, like pushing out more of the AI grading part of it. Like you're just not pushing it out because it can be done. There's some intentionality behind it because you're still rooting in that pure feedback and you want it to specialize it in just to still support and continue to grow students in that writing ability. So give us some updates. Give us some hot takes. What's going on?
I don't know if I have any hot takes. Yeah, we've been working through we've been knee deep in a building project and I don't want to share too many details because it's still so, we just launched the private beta of a new set of features that I think are going to be a game changer for writing outcomes. But because they're so early days and still changing so much, I don't want to share too much because
I agree with that.
Like 2 weeks. But of the things that we've publicly launched in the last couple months, the thing I've been most excited about is an activity called Pen Pals. And Pen Pals, you select two characters, and those are AI characters. And then those characters argue with each other about the students' writing. And then the class, and the teacher leads this discussion, but the class has to decide of these two, which one do I agree more with? And they vote for them. And then that character gives the students individualized feedback on their writing. And so it's super fun. It's using AI almost as like a foil in the classroom. And we've structured it intentionally, of course, to argue about the success criteria that the class is practicing to help teachers develop that understanding of that success criteria. But then a secondary goal of Pen Pals is AI literacy, because we want to encourage kids to challenge AI feedback and outputs and not just take it at face value. And so setting up that debate structure and having them argue with each other and kind of encouraging kids to debate and argue about it is kind of our goal there. And we've got some really great feedback. Like we've got, so just for example, just for your audience to make it make maybe more sense, like it's kind of like Inside Outy, if you've seen that Pixar movie. Like one of the characters is Surly Sam. Sorry, the movie's called Inside Out. But
yeah, Inside Out. Yeah, I got you.
But so we have like Surly Sam, he's angry. So you can pick Surly Sam. And then we've got Mellow Matt, and he's mellow. He's loosely based on Matthew McConaughey. So you pick those two, and then they argue with each other about the kids' writing. But what we've heard from teachers, especially in elementary settings, is they'll have the kids come up to the board and read the feedback aloud in the voice of the character. So it's like, you know, kid comes up and reads in a gravelly voice to try to be Surly Sam. And it brought us so much joy. Like that was one of the highlights of our spring for sure. So this is hearing the feedback from Pen Pals, which is still in a public beta. So people should go give it a try. Has been awesome. And we're going to make some changes this summer based on the feedback that we've gotten. But Pen Pals is a recent update. And then this other massive building project that we're tentatively calling Skill Builders is what I'm working on right now. But I, like I said, I don't want to share too many details, and I'm sorry to be like cagey about
it. Oh, listen, you got to keep those things because, you know, sometimes programs will push things out and you'll go test them. And it's like, man, that's so slow. Like it's not doing what I think it should do. Right? And then for me, like, all right, listen, I'm not going to touch it anymore. I don't want to play with it. And then when that happens, I've almost forgot about that feature until like 6 months later. And they're like, oh, it works now. Like, but I've already forgot. Like, so I get that part of it. So no worries. I don't think anybody's going to be upset about that.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's not even that I'm worried it'll be broken. It's that I'm worried it won't even work the same as what I describe on this podcast because we're changing it so much. So, the more on that soon. We're hoping to do the wider launch of that as we head into next school year. But if people would be interested in trying out these new features, they can email me at adam@myshortanswer.com and I'd be happy to give them access to them if they want to give them some.
And I'm going
to,
as soon as we get off today, I'm sending an email right now.
No, seriously, please do.
Yeah. And even like, you know, you talk about teachers using it differently, like the classrooms that I've been in and they've used it, they come up with some of the off the wall or just very creative ideas in their prompts and just the things that are happening is just incredible. And this whole like inside out, like little characters and the grumpy voices, that sounds awesome. And I think even when you talked about like two characters arguing against each other, I think about my own use of AI and the different platforms, whether like ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini. And, you know, each one has a different output. Like you can put the same prompt in there. They're each going to give you something different. You've got to figure out which one you really want to use or what information is accurate, not a hallucination or any of that. So it's kind of, that's really cool that you've built something, I guess, in my brain like that, because now you're getting two different viewpoints on a passage or a text or short answers to be able to see, hey, listen, this is really good on this part. This person thinks different. And now they're taking those two ideas and then they can go back and rewrite it and really create their own. And again, critically thinking to advance their writing. I think that's a really cool feature. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I appreciate you saying that. We put a lot of work into it and we're still planning to make, like I said, changes and tweaks to it, but we've been really excited by the feedback we've gotten thus far.
Awesome. Now, has you got any other big things coming out? I know you've got there's a whole list of things on there, right? You've got the pen pals. I can't think of the other ones. Tell us about the other ones you've got.
Yeah, we've got a bunch of activities. The most popular is Battle Royale. That's been on our free plan for forever. The way that one works, it's all peer feedback focused. So students submit their writing. As a teacher, once you have all that writing, you click begin feedback, and then every student sees two anonymous pieces of peer writing. Have to read both and decide of these two which one's stronger based on our success criteria. Then they'll click that one and then they repeat and repeat and repeat. And what we're doing on the teacher screen is we're whittling it down to one exemplar response. And then there's a big reveal and hooray, we reflect on that. That's on our free plan. That's one of our more popular activities, partly because it's got the competitive element. So I think kids really get into that. But also I think it's got the social element of, oh my gosh, I'm going to write something and my classmates are going to see it. So I should try hard.
Yeah.
I think that's a big part of the engagement of Short Answer and why people come back to it. And that's on our free plan. So I'd encourage your teachers that might be listening to go give it a try. So that's Battle Royale. I would say All In and Parrot are similar activities where we scaffold peer feedback through the medium of comparison. But the difference between those is with our activity called Parrot, the teacher selects two responses and the whole class just compares just those two responses. So you can be a little bit more deliberate as a teacher about what examples you're putting in front of kids and then like being intentional about drawing out contrasting cases that would be helpful to have kids understand whatever you're practicing. And then with All In, it's a bit longer of an activity because with that, the students are leaving open feedback on each other's responses as a part of that comparison process, which is nice because then they're getting individualized feedback in ways that they don't in Battle Royale, because in Battle Royale, we're knocking out responses, but it does take longer. So All In tends to be more popular in our English classrooms. We're spending a whole class period just focusing on writing would make sense. Whereas Battle Royale is more popular across the curriculum because you can use that for just kind of daily formative assessment purposes. And then of the schools and folks, because we have an activity called Quick Write. It's on our premium plan. So of the schools that have premium, it's our most popular activity. So with Quick Write, students submit, they get AI feedback on each success criteria. And then it's a cooperative game. So as a class, we're tallying up the score of all of the students' feedback to try to hit a class proficiency goal together. And so that's where we've been. That's one of those activities, kind of going back to the previous conversation, where we've tried to be intentional about how we've prompted AI to give kids feedback on their writing and how we've structured the activity to still make it feel like a collective human experience as opposed to just me staring at a screen reading AI feedback by myself. So I'm happy to dive more into any of that. I know that was really fast. If teachers go to our website, it's myshortanswer.com. And then there's a page called the Teacher Resources tab where you can do a clickable tutorial for every activity that I just described. But that's kind of the broad outline of all of our open-ended writing activities. And then, like I said, now the other half of the short answer equation that we're building is this this half called Skill Builders that I'm excited to share more about soon.
Yeah, well, that'll be number four. We'll have to get you on the show for that one.
I'm here anytime, man. Anytime.
Let's do it. And so part of this, when we think about like your battle royale and just those quick writes, I know you talked about success criteria. And I think this is a really good feature for students because like as a teacher, I know we're going to hit certain parts of the writing, whether we're working on a thesis statement, body paragraphs, it's just a quick write in class because we're going to practice a skill. Those success criteria, I think, are really good because now teachers can really pick and choose what they want students to look for. So whether we're working just for grammar for today, we're looking at our prepositions or really the thoughts and how that sentence is developed. I know we're adding those in there. And I know, I think on the free plan, you can do three of them. On the pen, you can do five. And so it gives that teacher more ownership of what we want the students to work on. So maybe we're doing a grammar unit and kids are writing a simple sentence. What'd you do on the weekend? Whatever. Now those peers can go back. I like this because now they're just looking for the grammar. They're looking for certain parts of it instead of having to look at everything and give, hey, let me see what I think needs to be worked on or what I think is done well in the writing. I think that's great. And I don't think I knew this about when you do the all in, that the students have the open communication where they can give their actual feedback for things. And so to have both of those, I think that's really cool. I think it helps the teacher on their side, gives the students some things to look at. So then when they do their own writing, now they can kind of keep that success criteria in their brain and kind of use that previous knowledge for their own writes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're calling out an important point. So the research base we grow out of is several studies, but the formative assessment framework that we use is from Dr. Dylan William and his book, Embedded Formative Assessment, and his research that the book is founded on, obviously. And one of his five pillars of effective formative assessment is clarifying and sharing learning intentions and outcomes with students. And that's a big part of the reason we've structured everything in Short Answer around success criteria. Like in my mind, the success criteria are just as important as whatever prompt you're asking, because that's really what's going to focus the learning outcomes. And yeah, I think that's critically important, especially when you're talking about AI feedback, because I think I've already mentioned this, but one of the challenges of AI feedback is it'll give you so much that it's cognitively overwhelming. It's just like, give you a whole page. And as a student, it's like, well, I don't really know what am I supposed to be getting out of this? Is it about my grammar? Is it about my ideas? Is it about the content? You know, what's the focus? And so by structuring our feedback in the platform around the predefined success criteria set by the teacher, I hope we're able to provide more focused feedback for kids, because I do think it's better for learning outcomes.
Yeah, and I think even like when you talk about learning outcomes, because of that focus, ability to peer review, like even if we lived in the same town, we worked at the same job, we're going to continue to critique each other on our jobs. We're going to continue to do that. And it's more instant when we have one thing happening. We'll be able to change quickly. Versus like you said, here's my whole list of AI things. I can work through them. But at that point, I'm just working through them to fix my paper, to fix my writing, versus to really understand critically why I made this mistake, why this needs to happen. And so we're really at this spot, especially with AI, I feel like, that the teacher has to play more of a role instead of just giving here's my paper and I mark it up as read the whole thing. I think writing is going to have to change to more of a process, to where we're working shorter paragraphs, shorter like critiques. And at the end, we can critique it all. And I think, you know, something's going to have to change.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. AI presents some really serious challenges to assessment validity when it comes to writing instruction, obviously, because writing is something that takes a lot of time. So it's not something that you can necessarily just sit down and write a 5-page research paper in class where the teacher can monitor a student, right? It's something that's going to have to take place over time. And because it has to take place over time, it's going to leave the classroom. And once it leaves the classroom, there's really no reliable way of monitoring how much of an influence AI is having on a student's process. So I agree with you that we need to be more process oriented, but I also think there's just some simple steps we can take to adjust writing instruction. One of them is I think we need to do more writing in class. And I don't think all writing can or should take place in class, but I think more of it should. And that's partly why we've structured Short Answer the way we have, to be structured around just short form writing, 1, 2, maybe 3 paragraphs max, because it is something you can do in class where you can monitor AI's influence. And then just as critically, another structural change is, I think we need more writing practice, because AI is inevitably going to write for students. And I think it's fair to assume the less you practice something, the more your skills atrophy, and our kids are already really struggling with writing. So I don't think writing instruction can just fall on the English teacher's shoulders anymore. This is kind of my TED Talk rant, so just bear with me.
Bring it. Come on.
No, I don't think this is a controversial take at all. Researchers have literally been advocating it for decades. Like, embedding writing across the curriculum is one of the most effective ways to improve literacy outcomes in a district. It's just been really hard to pull off historically, because teachers outside of English classes don't necessarily feel equipped to teach writing. And more importantly, they don't feel like they have time. They already have to cover so many standards, and now you're trying to add, quote unquote, one more thing to my workload. Like, it falls apart pretty quickly, even with the best of professional development and whatever other resources the school has expended to make that happen. And so I think what we're trying to do with Short Answer is create more coherence by embedding writing across the curriculum, but do it in a way that feels natural to what teachers are already doing. Like, we're just going to combine daily formative assessment with writing. So you can assess whatever the reasons that World War I broke out, but do it through writing in your social studies class to embed that practice across the curriculum. And so those two structural changes of more in-class writing and more writing across the curriculum, I think, are an important part of the answer to the AI challenge in writing instruction. And I hope Short Answer can be a part of that. And that's part of the reason we even called it Short Answer. And in some ways, I do have regrets around our name, because I don't think it accurately communicates fully what we are. But part of the reason we named it Short Answer was because we didn't want to scare off social studies and science and math teachers. Because when the name of your company is like The Writing Company or whatever, like Writable, for example, that's a very popular writing platform. When that's your name, well, when you're in a conference and like the social study, or not social studies as much, but when the science or math or elective teachers walk by, they're just reject out of hand. It's like, oh, that's for the English teachers. Like, that's not for us. And so we wanted to name ourselves something that was like appealing and open and something that people wouldn't reject out of hand. It's like, oh, short answer questions. That's something like that we use in my classroom. So there's pros and cons to that approach. I'm happy to get into that. But yeah, that was a long-winded way of saying more writing across the curriculum and more writing in class, I think, are important structural changes, in addition to what you mentioned, which is process over product thinking when it comes to writing.
Yeah, and when you think about like the naming of it, right, Short Answer, and you really want it to be more across all curriculum areas. And I know like on your website, you've got a spot where it kind of walks you through some trainings or some different prompts. And I remember early on diving through that section, and there were some math things. And I was like, math and writing? Like, I don't know about this. But like, the more I dove in, like, it really is now like, hey, here's your math process. Tell me in your own words what you did, versus like, here's your equation and just solve it. Or really can be able to talk about your knowledge of what variables are, what's this, what's that. And now, instead of just showing it on paper that you can solve equation and understand what the letters mean or this process, now we're back to this idea of writing, and I can put it on paper. I can explain myself, because that's going to be a skill we're just going to have in general. Because no matter like whether you're a podcaster, you are a founder of a program, you work at Walmart, wherever you work at, you're going to have to be able to write a description. You're going to have to be able to document something, and you want to be able to use that across all scenarios, whether it's in the classroom or out of it, and understanding that it all goes together. And it's even, I don't know how it is in Nebraska, but here in Tennessee, STEM has been a bigger initiative, especially in our district. We've got a couple schools that we've went through our STEM designation. We're hoping to hear back soon. And probably the time this recording comes out, they're all going to be certified, fingers crossed. But it's almost like that idea of STEM. Sometimes I feel like teachers feel like it's one more project. It's one more thing. But really, we're just taking the learning that we already have completed in class, and we're adding on to it to make it more engaging, right? Like, there was a third grade class that did a lemonade business, right? So you got your math skills, you're planning, you're creating, you're looking at like some just all over. And now you can go back and now we're able to write about it. We're able to do some things, or we can build a project on it. Like, all encompasses the learning. And I feel like too, again, not to go back to the AI, but like AI is going to have to change the way that we teach. And I feel like people are just slow. We're not, you know, like, I feel like even though the other day I was talking to somebody and I said, there's just tons of conversations that are happening, but we're really not changing what we're doing. I'm sure there's some great districts out there. There's some great teachers that are doing things. But I feel like as a whole, when I think about the bubble that I'm in on a daily basis, we're struggling to move from a conversation to an action plan for those things. And so I don't know.
Yeah, unfortunately. Well, I mean, there are some upsides to moving slow because
you are
more deliberate. But I do think it's a disservice in our current age of AI, especially because AI moves so fast, even from week to week, it's moving. And unfortunately, I think partly because of the fear associated with AI and the uncertainty surrounding it and what it means for assessment, what it means for teaching and learning, what it means for the job market, what it means for everything, what it means for human society, it all is just kind of leads to fear. And I think that fear is unfortunately being channeled into a lot of like anti-technology sentiment at the moment, which is a bummer. You know, there's a lot of movements across the country at the moment to basically strip out all digital devices from classrooms, which I think is the exact opposite of what we should be doing at the moment. But I think it's kind of a knee-jerk reaction to AI in a lot of ways. And just, oh my gosh, what the heck do we do? Well, the easiest, just get rid of all of it. And it's unfortunate. I think it's going to it's a disservice to our students because I think critically engaging with AI and learning how to critically engage and use it or not use it and learn when to use it and when not to use it is going to be a really important skill for kids as they go out into this new world where AI is an ever-present reality. And I don't think sticking our heads in the sand and just ignoring it is a viable solution, but unfortunately, there are a lot of folks that do at the moment. So we'll see where it goes. I'm not an administrator. I'm not a district leader. I'm not a state leader, so I don't have much sway in it, but I do have opinions. People should go read my Substack. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. But yeah, it's frustrating, but it's also understandable. And I think if you look throughout history, this is a common pattern of like when there is massive technological change, there's also tends to be a lot of unrest around that change. And I mean, we haven't reached the level of unrest. I certainly don't think teachers wanting to get rid of laptops in classrooms is like the level of unrest that we saw in response to like the Industrial Revolution or anything. But it is a historical pattern. And in some ways, I'm not surprised that there's a moral panic playing out in real time in response to AI.
Yeah. I mean, even like when you talk about like the changes, like especially like when I was in school and like you think about Google coming out, right? People can find papers, they can copy and paste. Like cheating's always been there, you know, plagiarism, all these things. But now I feel like the level of those type of ideas have just really increased. And so we're having to almost kind of backtrack. Because I feel like when, you know, Google, before AI, like we're still teaching common sense, we're doing our digital citizenship stuff, like we're teaching students how to be on devices appropriately and what to look up, what not to, and those type of things. But again, like, as you said, like AI is changing from week to week. And we've got to really, as educators, or just really people in this nation, continue to drive those points home of how to use it appropriately and how not to. Because, you know, kids are using it way faster than we'd use it. I mean, I've got a 10-year-old that has done some things. We use ChatGPT at home, like research, or like we're doing menus or going on vacation places. And so like my 10-year-old's like, hey, Dad, can we just get on ChatGPT and like look this up? And it's like, all right, we can. I have to make sure I use this as a learnable moment. Yeah. And there's been a couple times that I said this to several people. So like, she does a Bible study on Fridays. And so she was looking for a verse and she like, it's like, can I look on ChatGPT? We got this idea. Let me see a Bible verse. And so here comes this Bible verse. And I don't remember what the verse was, but I was like, now listen, Emma, you have to go get your real Bible and you need to look it up to make sure it's accurate. And she looked at me and I was like, but you got to remember ChatGPT is just like a robot that's just putting information out. And so it could be wrong. And we want to check that. So again, like, we've got to make sure as parents, teachers, we're continuing to, if they're using it, to slow them down a little bit to make sure what we're doing is accurate, what we're doing is correct. And even when it comes to writing feedback, like, hey, AI gave me this, but let me go take it to my English teacher. Let me go take it to my history teacher. Hey, will you read this and just see what you think? And I think we're going to see a difference between a human interaction to what the AI is going to bring. And even with that thread, and you talked about things coming across, I know in our state for Tennessee, not this year, but next year, I've been told, especially for, I don't know about high school, but I know like middle school, their writing is online and 80% of their writing is going to be graded by AI. And so you still have that human element, right? 20%, you still got that in there, but I'm really anxious to see how that's going to work next year and how that writing's going to be graded. And then is that going to change how teachers teach? Is that going to, you know, we're continuing as new things come out. I think the conversation is still like, we have to change how we're teaching. And even when it comes to short answer, we've got to change to not working on long paragraphs. We've got to really work on those short snippets, because that's really like, you know, again, like in the program, we could do long things, but those short things are, I think, more meaningful and more concise. And you're getting that feedback quicker versus grading, having students read a whole five paragraph essay versus like, here's five sentences, here's three sentences. Let's critique it. Let's look at our success criteria and give good some feedback, adjust it. And then let's look at the next part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's chunking, really. Even if you're doing a longer form writing, because I do still think there's a place, obviously, for teaching kids how to construct a longer form piece of writing and organize their thoughts over multiple pages, because that's a whole different challenge than creating a paragraph or a sentence. But I think if you're doing that 5 to 10 page paper, then yeah, short answer is a way of chunking that large, overwhelmingly difficult task for most high schoolers down into like a small, manageable, digestible chunk of, yeah, we've written a rough draft of our 5-page paper, but we're just going to copy paste in our opening paragraph. And we're just going to focus on thesis statements today as a way of just, we're going to drill into this one specific element of this larger body. So I hope we can be a helpful tool in doing that. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's a good call.
I agree with that. And listen, random thought, and I know you're really into research and I love that. Like anytime that I've talked about short answer and I talk about you, it's really just a quality thing, because it's not just pushing out a tool. It's really based off research and what you see. And even like today's recording, you brought up tons of research, tons of things that you've read. And I think it's just incredible. I'm not going to be able to speak super intelligent about this, but I was listening to this podcast and I don't remember the name of it. And they were talking about writing and just how AI generates things. And I want to say that students were writing and they used AI to help a little bit, but it was giving some weird like titles for their papers. And it was really interesting to talk about like the meaning of this based off AI sounded great, but then the meaning of it as a person is like, did you really miss the mark here? Is that as okay? And so I just wondered if there's like some current research that you've seen with writing and maybe AI, or just, I guess, really just any current research that you've has found is really interesting.
Man, there's a lot happening.
I know it's a lot. I know you read and you research a lot.
No, yeah. No, it's just that the pace of, so there's a few interesting things. I mean, the challenge with research on AI at the moment is that AI changes so fast and research moves so slow that it's like, we get a study published in 2025 or 2026, great. But if you read the study, it was done in the context of like GPT 3.5, and we're already on to like GPT whatever, 5. blah, blah, blah. And it's so much more advanced now that it's hard to even tell how relevant some of that research is to current tools, and even though it was only like a few years difference. So that's a huge challenge. That said, some of the research that I've read recently, part of the reason I read it, because we used it to structure QuickWrite and PenPals. I can share it out in the show notes or something. But it was led by, or I don't know if it was led by, but Dr. Steve Graham, who for my money is like one of the pillars of K-12 writing instructional research. He was on a study recently that looked at AI's ability to provide feedback. And they compared human feedback to AI feedback and expert teacher feedback, I should say. I shouldn't just say human. So they compared expert teacher feedback to AI feedback and found that it was basically the same. So in terms of using AI for feedback on student writing, specifically for low stakes formative assessment purposes, the conclusion of that paper was basically you're good to go. Like it's pretty solid for low stakes formative assessment purposes, which I think is awesome when you consider what we were talking about earlier on this call, which is like, think back even 5 years ago, just how long it would take an English teacher to get feedback to 120 papers. And now I can get it to them if I want to. Again, I have to be intentional about this, but if I want to, I can get them formative feedback in 5 seconds on a paper. And the feedback's high quality, as is evidenced by the study. Like, that's pretty I hate to use this term because I think it's overused, but it, that's a genuine game changer for writing instruction and for people to teach writing. So I think that that type of research is super exciting. There's also been research, and I can't remember who published this. I'm happy to share the link. We can share that with the show notes.
Yeah, that'd be perfect.
On these data science researchers that basically mapped the style and structure of writing that's produced by humans. And then they mapped that against style and structure of AI, like just measuring human writing against AI writing. And they found that it's basically completely different. Like there's almost no overlap in the style and structure of the writing. And so what that means is that, as we kind of touched on earlier, AI doesn't sound like us. It sounds like something different, similar, sort of like copying what we sound like, but in a weirdly sort of corporate generic way. And in that way, and this is the thrust of the paper, it's like, if we all use the same five tools to help us write, are we all just going to start to sound the same? Because it doesn't sound like us, and it all sounds like this generic slop. And I don't know. I mean, the jury's still out because we're still grappling with this stuff as a society. But I tell you, when I scroll through my LinkedIn feed and every post has the same voice because every post was written by with the aid of ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini. Yeah, it feels dystopian. It feels very dystopian. So I think that's a call to action for us as educators to continue to double down on developing students' authentic writing ability, what they're able to produce on their own. And within that, their ability to communicate in their own voice and who they are and what they believe and what they want to get out of this life through written language. I think that's going to be critically important. But going forward, I do worry sometimes about what AI means for when we're all using it to read for us and write for us. But those are the two studies that come to mind. I'm ashamed I can't remember. I can't remember that second study, but we'll link it in the show notes. I'll send it to you.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. And I put you on the spot there. I just, you know, sometimes it's fun to do that. And listen, I know I don't want to say we're running out of time, but I know we're all busy and I don't want to take a ton of your time. But the next thing, like when we think about going forward, and this is part of the show where I call the Tech Flush tip of the day. And normally I have the toilet flush that flushes. I know we've talked about that. I've just not figured it out yet how to put it in this new system to where it makes it just organic in there. But when we think about writing and not just, you know, you talked about just not just the English teacher, but all teachers, right? So kind of like what is some good advice for teachers that are, and I know this is like an open-ended, like a can of worms, like, but I've had enough conversations with people and everybody has certain ideas. Some people are like all about using it. Let me train people. You know, I've had one teacher talk about that. Hey, we're going to use AI to write it, but we're going to grade AI's writing. Like we're going to say, hey, write my paper. Now we're going to print it out and we're going to see what we can change. What makes it not, you know, just the different oddball approaches to that. And so I'd love to hear your take on just a teacher. How do we continue to go forward in using AI, but still need that handwritten note, typing on our keyboards, but not use AI? Like how do we balance that, I guess? I don't know. The thoughts that I want to say are out there and yeah. I just can't really direct them.
No.
Maybe you'll kind of pick it up, but... No, what are your thoughts?
It's a great question. I'm just laughing because we lead like half, like 4-hour workshops on this question. So it's a great question. I'm a struggle, I think, to
do we do 4-hour episode. Yes.
So let me just give you the Cliff Note version of the 4-hour workshop. Practically, I think you got to have a clear policy with your kids to start. And at one time, my hot take was that you didn't, and that most issues around AI could just fall into pre-existing academic integrity language in your student handbook or in your classroom syllabus. But I don't think that's the case anymore. I think it's a profound enough technology that you need to directly address it in a syllabus. And a simple system that I've seen in like is a labeling system for assignments, where basically it's... I like a red, yellow, green system. Some don't, but I like the simplicity of it. If I label the assignment red, you cannot use any AI, and here's why. So I'm explaining to my students my intentions and why I don't want them to use AI. I think sometimes that's skipped. If I label it yellow, they can use some AI with specific constraints, and I explain those constraints. And then if I label it green, not only can they use AI, they should. That's part of what I'm assessing, is their ability to use it effectively, and that's part of my assessment construct. We could talk about that for a long time, the pros and cons of a system like that. But just having a clear system in your syllabus and clearly communicating what you're going to do with AI in your classroom, especially a writing classroom at the beginning of the school year, think is critically important. So you set the policy, and then I think you need to communicate the policy with kids. There's a tool that I really love called AI Trust You that can actualize this, but the larger concept is just an AI truth and trust statement. But it's basically, when I open up a document or a big writing assignment that I'm going to do in this class, there's a little note there that's explaining what kids can and can't do with AI, and maybe more importantly, why, as a teacher, I set those expectations. Kind of going back to that wise feedback research that I talked about earlier about the importance of communicating your intentions with students. So set the policy, communicate the policy, and then enforce the policy. And the enforcement part is the hard part. Because like once writing leaves the classroom, it's really challenging to monitor AI's influence. So a couple of things. Do more writing in class. Do more writing paper pencil. I'm not saying all writing paper pencil. Don't get me wrong. But I do think, especially at the beginning of the year, when you're trying to get a sense of students' voice, I think some paper pencil stuff to start can be really helpful. But obviously, I also think kids need to be doing most of their writing through the medium in which they will do the overwhelming majority of writing in their lives, which is on a keyboard, on a computer. But more in-class writing, more paper pencil, I think is a simple solution. I think there's some revision tracking tools, if you're doing digital writing, that can be really helpful for monitoring AI's influence. My favorite is Brisk. Brisk has an inspect writing tool. It's a Chrome extension that will show you every edit that was made in a document in a sped up video so you can quickly review a revision history. But there are other tools that will do that and that are free. I think that from a management perspective, if you're just looking for practical tips for teachers, I think that's a helpful one. But unfortunately, even that is falling apart in a world where agentic browsers can now like open up documents and do things on their own, simulate a revision history. And so I think structurally going forward, what that means is we're going to need to layer our assessment where we're not using just any one measure. We're doing multiple measures of a student's understanding, especially with larger summative assessments. I said that this was going to be the Cliff Notes version, and here I am just giving like a
love it. Bring it. Come on.
The whole workshop. But layering assessment, this is from Dr. Kat Arundel and Philip Dawson and some of their amazing work. But basically, is any layer of assessment you can imagine is going to have holes in it, like a piece of Swiss cheese. But where one layer, when I say hole, I mean like AI plagiarism can easily just get right through and invalidate your assessment. So you need layers stacked on top of each other, because where one might have a hole, another one might not. So yeah, you know, maybe we're going to do revision tracking as one of my layers of assessment. But in addition to that, we're going to do more writing in class. In addition to that, we're going to do some peer conferencing. And part of my assessment, to your point, Josh, earlier, like the, oh my gosh, I just lost my train of thought. The process over product. We're going to, part of your formative assessment grade on this is your ability to like provide like the feedback that you're providing to your classmate and then peer conferencing. And then during that peer conferencing, I'm going to have a one-on-one conversation, and that's going to be part of my assessment of this with you. And then we're also going to do, if it's a big summative, an in-class presentation that's almost like a defense of what you wrote, where you walk us through as a class your process and how you chose to go about it. And then we're combining all of that maybe into one grade. Again, this is describing maybe what would be a big summative assessment for like a senior capstone research paper. But I think rethinking assessment through the lens of layering going forward is going to be important in a world where AI can do just about any task that we throw at students. So that was a really long-winded response, but set a policy, communicate a policy, and then enforce the policy. And hopefully within there were some strategies that folks listening can take away from this. But I know that was also really rushed.
No, I think that's really good, because I feel like some of the conversations I've had with people, that it's always like, we're not getting our Chromebooks out. We're handwriting everything. Like, we're not going to address AI.
Yeah.
But we don't live in a world that we have to address it. And so I love that, the color coding. I love giving students options to where throughout the year, listen, this paper has to be you. No AI. But the next one we do in a couple of weeks, I'm going to let you use AI a little bit. And the last one, we're going to have a blast and we're just going to see what AI does and create some things. Like, and I love that idea of it, because even like as a professional, even for you, like there's some things that, yes, AI is going to grade it. Some things are going to revamp my email that I send out. But sometimes like I'm not going to touch it and I want it to be just me. And I feel like we do that naturally, but students need to be guided in that direction. So set those policies to enforce it, to have your layers to your assignments. I think it's just, it's a great way of doing it. And I really hope people really just buy into those ideas, even if they change the color coding, change their process, whatever. But they have to, again, they're going to have to change the way they teach. They're going to have to change their their policies. They're going to have to change something going forward to keep.
I totally agree. And in some ways, I do think paper pencil is being used as a crutch. It's like, actually, I don't need to adjust the way I teach. I'll just do everything paper pencil. And it's like, okay, I guess that's one way to do it. But there was this viral article. It was written by NPR about a teacher in Texas who I've actually interacted with, and she's great. Her name's Shanae Bond. But the article is, she's a high school English teacher, and she has gone completely digital. The opposite. She's gone completely analog. She's only using paper pencil in her writing classroom. There's no computers anymore. And that works for her, and that's great. But it was funny. I was just watching her interact with people on social media in response to that article. And she was like, it's so exhausting how much work it is for me. And it's like, okay, you're a rock star educator. And so that's working for you. And that's great. I'm not criticizing that. But I remember I was talking to a teacher in Kansas when this was coming out, and she was like, I have 3 kids. I'm not, like, I got baseball practice. I got stuff going on after school. I'm sorry. I do not have time to go back to paper pencil and like wrangle together thousands of notebooks and pieces of paper and manually grade everything again. All that to say, teaching is deeply contextual. Like, what works in one classroom might not work in other classrooms. And I think there are a variety of ways that we can go about adjusting instruction and assessment in the age of AI. But I don't think the default response can just be, well, we'll just go back to analog and that's it. That's the end of the discussion. I think that's short-sighted. So I don't know if that was coherent. Sorry, I'm kind of rambling, but
no. I think sometimes we get these thoughts and we just like, we let them
gotta let them fly.
But really, I think no matter like the style of teaching that you do, I think when it comes to writing, we have to be open. We have to be open to change that process. Whether we're using a short answer, whether we're changing the way we do in our classrooms, I think we have to be open for those changes and just figure, and even like, you know, your process might not work for me. It may not work for somebody else, but we've got to figure out our own process, our own way of doing things in our that are benefiting our students. So when they do leave high school, they do leave college, they start doing whatever job, they're able to be successful and they're able to be their own person instead of relying on something else. And I think that's really where we're at with everything, is just continuing to be our own person and use things as a tool, not as a crutch.
Yeah, 100%. Agreed.
Cool. Man, I'm looking at the time. We've been talking for an hour. And I love, like, this is my favorite, my soapbox about like podcasting or just genuine conversations, that if, as long as you don't look at your watch, you don't look at the time, at some point you're going to look at it and you're like, oh my gosh, we've been talking for this long. And it's just a phenomenal conversation. This is why I love having you on the show. Even like today, like we talked, I have no script. I have no idea what we're going to talk about. And we just went with it. And I love that part of this process, for not just the show, not just for me, but just the idea of recording. I think it's just phenomenal.
Yeah. So, well, I appreciate you having me on, and I really enjoy the conversations too. And I'll come on. I'll be your first four-time guest, and we'll talk about
one of these days. We'll be back at a conference together, and we'll just have to do it live. We'll just sit next to each other. We can use one camera, and like, it'll be awesome.
That sounds great. I'm in anytime, man.
There we go. Well, cool. Now, listen, I know we can go to myshortanswer.com. We can follow you on Twitter. We can follow you on X, all the things. Is there any special things you want to tell us about how to stay connected, to follow you, the program, or anything?
No, I think if you just Google search short answer, you'll find us. But if you want to contact me directly, my email is adam@myshortanswer.com. Happy to chat about anything.
Well, listen, for episode 80, Adam, I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on the show. Oh, and listen, this is totally a side note. One thing that's incredible, I know I talk you big up and gaslight you all the time, but one thing I did not know, and we talked about this in Texas, that I think I assumed, like, you and your wife started this, then you hire some more people and you have this group of employees, workers at your company, right? But really, like, you and your wife really do a ton of it. And your wife, you told me, was actually the coder for most of it, which is just incredible. I think that's awesome that you both get to do that together and just create. And that, when you told me that in Texas in the vendor hall, I was like, are you serious? Like, that, I don't think I realized that. So I just wanted to give you both props for continuing to build that and being able to work with each other and do that.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. I know it's unique and it's really cool. I feel special that I get to work with my wife every day. because it wasn't always that way. We lived in very different realities when we had, when she was a software developer, I was a teacher. It's funny that she's walking by in the background as it's happening.
We're giving her a shout out. She heard it, so she had to get on camera.
Exactly. But yeah, it's really cool. And we've tried to be intentional about the way we structure our company so that we can maintain a focus on impact, which is our North Star. And keeping our team small and scaling on as a small organization, I think, helps us do that. So it creates a lot of work. And sometimes, especially on days like today, it's a Friday, it's been a long week, I'm like struggling to organize thoughts because of how much work we do. But I also think it's the right structure for us. And I'm really proud of what we've done. And it's been great to go around the country and meet awesome educators like you and get to have these cool conversations. I feel really lucky to do what I do.
Yeah, it's always fun to get connected. All right, Adam, I know it's Friday. We got things to do today. Again, I appreciate you being on the show. Remember the rest of you out there listening, you can follow me on Spotify, Apple. We got the website, the Tech Flush, the bit.ly/TechFlush. You can see all that stuff. Adam, when we post this, if you'll send me those resource notes from today, anything you want to share, we'll make sure to put those on the website for everybody to listen to. But other than that, I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. And until next time, we'll catch you later. See you later. Bye.
Thank you for joining us today on the Tech Flush podcast. Stay tech savvy, keep those gadgets charged, and remember, teachers and technology go hand in hand, connecting students to a world of knowledge for an electrifying learning experience. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and spread the word about the Tech Flush to your friends. Catch all episodes on Apple Podcasts. See you next time on the Tech Flush.